have a question, but my husband is a business owner over in Sterling, Illinois. And one of the... I'm actually Hopkins Township Clerk over in Whiteside County. What we're seeing is the younger people, and I don't know how we can spur people on to vote for Romney and Ryan. The younger people, they go to work. We have them work for 6 months, a year. Then they don't start showing up. And they collect unemployment. And it's just like this vicious cycle that we got to stop, because if they're unemployed, they're not paying into Social Security. And so you older folks are going to pay for it. We're going to pay for it. My kids are going to pay for it. We've got to get jobs back going and reduce the time spent off the job.
Right.
Get those people trained. Half the time we can't hire people because they're not qualified as welders. We're not talking service industry. We're talking manufacturing jobs. That's what we need.
Welders are great jobs. We have a shortage of welders in this country in some areas. Absolutely. Look, the youth unemployment rate is disastrous. 50% of recent college graduates are either not working in the field that they studied for, or they're not working at all. That's where we are today. This is why, of all things, you need opportunity by having economic growth. If the economy's growing, then there are those opportunities for young people to get good careers and get good jobs. If the economy's not growing, then you have more of this. And if we are wasting our youth, if we are saying to our youth, there's no opportunities, and we're encouraging more dependency, then we're using the energy of this country. Here's the point. Manufacturing is a good example. We need to keep our tax rates low so our manufacturers aren't taxed a lot more than their foreign competitors are being taxed. President Obama is guaranteeing that virtually all of our successful manufacturers pay a tax rate above 40%, when our international average tax rate on our foreign manufacturers are paid at 25% or less. Look at energy. By standing in the way of U.S. energy development like the Obama administration is, whether it's oil, gas, coal, all of these other things, it makes energy more expensive. You know, manufacturing uses a lot of energy, a lot of natural gas. You crank up the price of it, you make it less competitive. And so we need to have pro-growth policies that help entrepreneurs, that help small businesses. And the reason we talk about entrepreneurs and small businesses is because that's where 65% of our net new jobs come from. That's how people get jobs and income security. That's how workers know that they're going to have more take-home pay and they have a better chance of getting ahead. But if you keep stifling these businesses, if you keep shutting down small banks, community banks, which give businesses the credit, if you keep making their tax rates higher, if you keep drowning them in red tape, then you don't get the economic growth, you don't get the business creation, and you don't get the jobs. It all, at the end of the day, comes down to job creation. And if you want to make sure that your children are going to be better off, you want them to have opportunities so they can do what they want in their life. That's the whole point of America. It doesn't matter who you are or where you come from or how you were born or under what circumstance you were born. In this country, traditionally, the only thing that limits you from reaching your potential is your own God-given talent and your own effort. That's the American idea. We need to foster that American idea, and we don't want to teach our kids that it's out of their reach. I mean, look, if you have youth unemployment in countries like Greece and Spain, who are practicing the same kind of failed economics that our president is pushing us toward, their unemployment's over 50% for these youth. You're losing a generation. Anybody else? Okay, she's got a Green Bay Packers shirt. I have to pick on her. I apologize. You know, sorry.
Hi. My question is, you know, you keep talking about China and jobs, and then we talk about the unemployment. But where are the answers? I mean, why aren't you more specific? I heard you, was it Sunday when you were on Fox? And you didn't answer his question about how we're going to, you know, what are your plans?
Oh, yeah. No, look, when you get into math conversation, It can take a little while. Let me give you some specific answers right now. Here's what our five-point plan is right there. Energy. The president is shutting down energy exploration on our public lands, on our continental shelf in Alaska. We could become North American energy independent if we open up our energy resources. Now what? Keystone Pipeline is a perfect example. Tens of thousands of jobs. Let that oil from Canada come into this country instead of sending it to China. Those are specific. See, this right there creates manufacturing jobs. Pipe fitters, welders, manufacturers, drillers, and you lower the price of energy and you make us less dependent on foreign oil. It's our number one source of our trade deficit. It's a threefer. Jobs in America, lower prices, stop sending money to countries that don't like us. That's just plank number one. Number two, education. And there are two things we say about this. Number one, take on the special interest groups that are standing in front of that single mom with three kids in the poor rural area in the inner city that has their kids going into a failing school. Let her take her kids out of that school and send them to a choice school or a charter school where they can get a good education and get out of the cycle of poverty. It's really important. People who are adults. Look, I live in Janesville. I live about 2 hours northeast of here. It looks just like this town. Actually, this looks very much like some buildings we have in Wisconsin. There are a lot of people who are in their 40s and their 50s who lost their job at the factory in town, who don't have another job that's in the area that can replace the living they had. You need to give them the ability to go back to school, to technical college, to a four-year college, whatever they want, to get new skills. We have 46 different job training programs at the federal government spread across 9 different government agencies. We don't even measure whether they work or not, whether they're getting people placed in jobs or not. It's just bureaucracy. We're saying consolidate those into scholarships to give to people who are out of work so they can use that to go back to a school of their choice, to get training of their choice, so they can get the career of their choice for the 21st century. That helps get people out of the rut they are in and back into good jobs. If you want to be a welder, here's a scholarship. Go get welding training at Black Hawk Technical Institute, which is the one we have in my town. Number three, trade. Here's what we're talking about, trade. Just China. I mean, just one country, according to our federal government, the ITC, the International Trade Commission, their theft of our intellectual property, stealing our patents, stealing our processes, has cost us 2 million jobs alone. If you don't stand up to countries who are stealing our intellectual property, who are stealing our products, then that sends a green light to all the other countries around the world that it's however you want it. It's wild, wild west. We need to make sure that we crack down on countries that steal our products because other countries are going to say, oh, you can get away with it, so keep doing it. We can't do that. We need to clamp down on that. The president hasn't initiated a single new trade agreement since he came in office. And if you're standing still on trade, you're slipping farther behind. Other countries are getting better trade agreements for their manufacturers, for their products, freezing us out. Look, we grow a lot of things here in the upper Midwest, a lot of food. We make a lot of things. 95% of the world's consumers are outside of this country. So if we want to have good jobs, we need to be able to grow more and make more and sell them overseas. That means we need to open up new markets to our products, and this president hasn't been doing that. Number three, and this is the point I'm making here, we have to cut spending. We can't keep racking up trillion-dollar deficits every year. We've spelled out, here's how we're going to fix Medicare. Here's how we're going to fix Social Security. Here's where we want to cut spending. Here's how we're going to grow the economy. That's essential to getting this debt under control because the debt itself is hurting our economy today. It's putting a huge amount of uncertainty on our job creators because you have no idea what the dollar is going to be worth down the road. You have no idea what interest rates are going to be down the road, and it's hurting job creation today. And in our tax plan, it's really simple. The president tries to get away with massive distortions. Look, there's only one person who has raised taxes and who's promising to raise taxes in the future who's running for president, and his name is Barack Obama. Now, our plan says this. Lower tax rates across the board by 20%. How do you do that without losing revenues? By closing loopholes. We have about $1 trillion a year of foregone revenues through all the various different loopholes and deductions. And what we're saying is The wealthier people who use a lot of these deductions close their loopholes. So when a wealthier person can shelter money from being taxed, that means everybody pays higher tax rates. But if you subject more of their income to taxation, more of their income is taxed, and that allows us to lower revenues for everybody across the board. That means middle-class taxpayers have lower tax rates, and there's plenty of fiscal room to keep these important preferences for middle-class taxpayers, you know, like charitable donations or buying a home or health care. Every time we've done this, we've created economic growth. You know, the shame of it all is there a lot of Democrats who agree with us? Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill did the same thing in 1986 to clean up the tax code, and it triggered an economic renaissance. There are Democrats right now who think the secret to economic growth is lowering our tax rates, and plugging special interest loopholes. You see, the philosophy is different between ourselves and the president. Right now, you pay artificially high tax rates, you send your money to Washington, and then if you do something that Washington approves of, they'll let you keep some of your money back. We look at it the other way around. We think it's your money in the first place. Why don't you keep it in the first place and you decide what you want to do with it, because it's your money. That helps growth. That helps jobs. Problem is, it just took me about 5 minutes to go into all of this with you. When you're on a 30-second TV show, you can't do it as much. But the point is, go to our website. You can see all this. Mitt Romney has put more specifics, more details about how to grow the economy, about how to save Medicare and Social Security, about how to prevent a debt crisis, than the incumbent president of the United States has. All President Obama is saying is another round of stimulus where he spends money on his friends, on his interest groups, on cronies like Solyndra, and then add more loopholes to the tax code and raise tax rates. And by the way, if you add up all of President Obama's proposed tax increases, it pays for less than a fifth of his proposed deficit spending increases. So all these tax increases are just expended in Washington. Why don't we keep that money in Clinton, Iowa? Why don't we keep that money in our manufacturers? Why don't we keep that money with our farmers so they can do more and they can hire more people? That's how you get better take-home pay. That's how you grow the middle class. That's how you create jobs. You bet. How about the gentleman right here? Let the mic guy come over to you there. Air Force, is that what I see?
Yeah,
thanks for your service.
I served in the Air Force in 65, straight out of high school, and I learned in the military the skills that I had to take me through life. I served in Grenada, and I served in Iran. And I live off of Social Security. I live off $1,000 a month. And I cannot understand why this country that I gave my life for feels that they should tax me twice for Social Security. They already taxed me for that, and they take a third of it back when they give me that check.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, sir. Now, there's a tax on Social Security benefits he's talking about. I've voted consistently to repeal that tax because you know what? You already paid for this. It's your benefit. You already paid tax on this money once before. Number two, it's funny how Joe Biden and others talk about this issue. Joe Biden voted for this tax. President Obama voted a few times to keep this tax. We think it's a wrong tax because you already paid tax on this. But here's the other point. If we don't work to prevent Social Security and Medicare from going bankrupt, then current seniors get hurt. Look, when the Social Security IOUs run out, when the trust fund's exhausted, a 25% across-the-board benefit cut kicks in the middle of people's retirement. That's what the current law does. We can't allow that to happen. This is why Mitt Romney and I said, you know what, I understand. They throw all this political mud at you if you try to solve problems. We're still going to solve this problem. Because if we don't get Medicare and Social Security solvent, then Social Security recipients get a 25% across-the-board benefit cut when the program goes bankrupt. We can't live for that. Look, Social Security is a program that's personally very important to me. When my dad died when I was a teenager, I got survivor benefits. It helped me pay for college. It helped my mom go back to school. And she got on a bus every day, went to Madison, went to the University of Wisconsin, got a new trade, got a new skill so she could start her small business. Social Security was there when my family needed it. It's there for you. And there is no reason why politicians can keep acting like politicians and get away with this, because if we don't fix this program, it's going to hurt current seniors. And here's the point. What we're saying, our solution, is if we fix this now, it doesn't change benefits for anybody 55 or above. You got to understand, for my generation, it's bankrupt. For my children's generation, it's bankrupt. So you got to reform it for my generation. And if we go now and pass these reforms, it only affects people 54 and below, and it guarantees that that benefit cut doesn't happen, and that those people who already retired, who paid into this program on the promise that it would be there for them, it guarantees that it is there for them. But you need leadership to take this on, and Mitt Romney is going to give us the kind of leadership to make sure we save this program. Now, Medicare, I just want to take a quick second just to clear up, because you'll see a lot of TV ads. Here is the difference between the Romney plan on Medicare and the Obama plan. And I got a chart up here that shows it. Our plan says this: don't change the benefit for people 55 and above. Again, just like Social Security, you organize your retirement around it. And then you have to reform it for my generation. I'll explain that in just a minute. Here's what Obamacare does. It treats Medicare like a piggy bank for Obamacare. The current law, which we now call Obamacare, takes $716 billion from Medicare to spend on Obamacare. Remember all those years of raiding the Social Security Trust Fund to pay for all these other programs? Well, Obamacare begins that with Medicare now. So our payroll taxes, which are supposed to go to Social Security and Medicare alone, now go to Social Security, Medicare, and part of Obamacare. And he puts a new board of 15 bureaucrats, unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats, starting next year, they're appointed, and they're required to cut Medicare to providers, cut Medicare payments to providers each and every year, which leads to denied care for current seniors. We don't want unelected bureaucrats cutting our Medicare payments, which leads to denied care for current seniors. We don't want to raid the Medicare program to pay for the Obamacare program. So the best thing we can do to save Medicare is to repeal Obamacare. And the best way to save Medicare and prevent it from going bankrupt, because in about 2026, I'm doing this off the top of my head, that's when the trust fund goes bankrupt. What we're saying is this: reform it for my generation so we can guarantee it for the current generation. My mom's been on Medicare for over 10 years. She paid into the program all of her working life. It's a promise the government made to her. My taxes pay for her benefit. That's the way the program works. But because we got 10,000 people retiring every day, the boomers are retiring, and they're going to be doing it like this for 20 years, there are fewer of us paying into the program than there are those retiring on the program. So you need to reform it for the next generation to save it for the current generation. So what we're saying is, for people 54 and below, when they become Medicare eligible, have the system work like the plan I have as a congressman, or like federal employees have. You get guaranteed coverage options that actually you can choose from, including traditional Medicare. And what that means is you get to pick the plan that you want. It's guaranteed. You can't be denied. And then Medicare pays for a big portion of your premium. Total coverage for the poor and the sick. The same kind of coverage for middle income and not as much for wealthier people. Doing it this way, empowering 50 million seniors the right to choose the plan that fits their needs, making them providers compete against each other for our business, saves Medicare. And it's a big change versus the Obama plan, which is 15 bureaucrats decide how our Medicare plan works. And even with that, the program still goes bankrupt. It's our obligation to save and protect Medicare and Social Security. And we're putting the ideas that are out there to do that. And if we go with four more years, then we have more bankruptcy. And we can't allow that to happen. How about over here?
I'm very concerned about the Keystone Pipeline. I just want to know when you and Romney are elected, if we still have an opportunity to change that so that we can have the pipeline coming this way instead of being sold to China.
The inauguration day of Mitt Romney is January 21st. Am I right about that? That's the day the Keystone Pipeline gets approved. Day one, we say yes to Keystone. Day one. There is no good reason to reject this proposal. Look, you can understand, I guess, why the president did it when you look at all of his other proposals. He has this national energy tax that he wants to impose on our economy. Remember, he passed this through the House. He barely failed to get it through the Senate, meaning it got killed in the Senate. They call it cap and trade. It's a national energy tax on all of our energy, on our carbon-based energy. That means you pay more for gas, you pay more for oil, you pay more for home heating, for electricity, for coal. So his whole purpose is to raise the price of this kind of energy. So when you see that that's what he wants to do, you can sort of understand that's why he's saying, don't bring cheaper, more affordable oil in from Canada, have them send it to China, because that raises the price. I tell you what, it's ridiculous. We would get thousands of jobs just making the pipeline. They've got tens of thousands of miles of pipeline running through Nebraska right now. Nebraska says, go ahead, bring it through. So there's really no excuse other than the president personally intervened in this measure to prevent this pipeline from being built. This is a key part of our plan to get us North American energy independent by the end of this decade. And I guarantee you, on day one, Keystone Pipeline is approved. We pick up the phone, call the Canadians and say, send it here, don't send it to China. That will help us lower gas prices. How about the guy right over here? He's right next to the mic. There's somebody right there.
It seems that the federal government has a lot of open-ended programs. How do you propose to restrain the size of government, what they take out of the economy?
First of all, you need to review. Remember the president said, I'm going to go through the budget line by line, detail by detail, and get rid of what we don't need? Yeah, that never really actually happened. This is actually what I do as chairman of the budget committee. We literally go through these programs line by line. Here's the way it works in Washington. They just lay a program on top of program on top of program, and they don't even look as to whether or not these things are redundant, duplicative. You know, I got a good friend of mine. He's a senator from Oklahoma. His name's Tom Coburn. And he has gone through with the General Accountability Office and identified hundreds of billions of dollars of duplicative and wasteful programs. We put those things in our budget for being cut. Mitt Romney calls it his China test. Is this program so important and so valuable that it's worth borrowing all this money from China to finance it? That's the test right there. Number two, we do need a cleansing of the federal government. And what we could say is you got to cap spending. You have to have caps on spending, on all government spending, to make government more efficient, to make government live within your means. We don't have, you know, most of our government is on autopilot. About three-fifths of our government spending has no caps. Congress doesn't even deal with them on a year-to-year basis. So when three-fifths of your government is being spent on autopilot, and don't forget, is it noon? I'm just kidding. Yeah, I know. Sounds like it, yeah. I know. Well, a lot of towns have the noon bell. I can't read that. Yeah, it's a test. I assume it was a test. I was just joking. I'll talk through it. You can hear me, right? When government is on autopilot, then there's no incentive for government to live within its means. President Obama rejects all of these caps. We finally forced the president to sign a bill to put caps on what we call discretionary spending. That's the minority portion of the budget that Congress appropriates every year. But you know what? The budget rules got to be changed. If I want to go to the floor and pass an amendment to cut out wasteful Washington spending, by the rules, that money isn't saved. It's got to be spent somewhere else in government. It's just ridiculous. And so what we're proposing are very specific reforms of our budget system to make sure we can actually cut spending and save that money. to go through and review all of these things. That's what the job training thing's about, is consolidate these programs, get rid of bureaucracy, and focus on the need to make sure that these things work. You've got to actually put discipline on government. Government agencies get an automatic inflation update every year. We want something we call zero-based budgeting. That means you don't give a government agency an automatic spending increase and then negotiate a spending increase on top of that. You get no more than what you got last year because you need to become more efficient. These are the kinds of things we need to do to make sure that hardworking taxpayers are respected and the bureaucracy doesn't get to fritter their money away. One more? How about the gentleman over here? He's a veteran, so I got to give him the last go-ahead. Wait for the mic if you don't mind, sir.
Let me sit down. We have 47% of the people in the United States pay no taxes, federal income tax. Is there any way possible that this 47% can pay a nominal fee or something so they feel that they have small ownership in the government? Maybe they won't take all the handouts so readily.
I got an idea. Let's help them get jobs so they can get a good paycheck so then they're good taxpayers. This is the point that Mitt and I have been trying to make. And sometimes the point doesn't get made the right way. We don't want a stagnant economy that fosters dependency. We've added 15 million people to the food stamp rolls in the last 4 years in large measure because there's no opportunity. There's no economic growth. Our goal has got to be to attack the root causes of poverty, to break the cycle of poverty, to get people out of poverty back into the middle class instead of simply treating the symptoms of poverty, because if you simply do that, you make it more tolerable and there you perpetuate poverty. We want economic growth. The whole idea of this country is opportunity and upward mobility, but you can't have that without economic growth. And so I don't think the answer is to tax people who are slipping farther behind, who see the American dream falling out of their reach and out of their grasp. The goal is to get people the support and the help they need to get back on their feet. We don't want a dependency culture. We want a working culture. We want a savings culture. We want an opportunity culture. And the way you do that is economic growth. Now, that's the point we keep trying to make. I worry that we have these tipping points we're reaching in this country. One, we have this tipping point of debt, which if we hit a debt crisis in this country, like in Europe, then everybody gets cut. Everybody gets hurt. The economy goes down. And I also worry that we have this culture of dependency where because there's a lack of economic opportunity, there's a lack of jobs, that more and more people who are able-bodied have to become dependent upon government for their livelihoods. That drains them of their will and their incentive to make the most of their lives. That's not the American dream. You know, Ellen Borlaug, who's here with us, gave me on the bus on the way over here a copy of the Iowa state motto: "Our liberties we prize, and our rights we will maintain." That says it pretty well right there, doesn't it? The role and goal of our government has historically been this: protect our natural rights and promote equality of opportunity so we can make the most of our lives, so we can reach our potential. But what's happening more and more these days, because of the president's policies and because of his philosophy, it's as if the role and goal of government is for the government to give us new rights that they get to regulate, they get to decide, they get to redistribute, and that the goal of government is to equalize the results of our lives. That's a very different notion. That's a very different idea. And that means a much bigger government. That means we surrender more of our money, more of our sovereignty, and more of our power to a distant bureaucracy. That ends up with cronyism, corruption, corporate welfare, big government and big business joining in a common cause that has a stagnant economy and less opportunity. We've seen what these ideas do. Go home, turn on your TV, and look at the riots in Europe. Look at the debt crisis. We don't want a welfare state with a debt crisis. We want an opportunity society with prosperity. You know, America, I see these veterans around here. America is not just Clinton, Iowa, and Janesville, Wisconsin. It's not just a country with a flag. America is an idea. It's the only country founded on an idea. The idea is really clear. Thomas Jefferson said it so eloquently in the Declaration of Independence. Our rights come from nature and nature's God, not from government. That's the whole idea of this country. That's what gives us prosperity. That's what gives us liberty. That's what gives us freedom. That's what gives us free enterprise. And when you see our government doing things, look, I was up in Loras College last night. That's where my grandpa went to school. And I'm a Catholic, and that's a Catholic school. And I don't mean to say this is just a Catholic thing, but when you see our federal government telling things like groups like Catholic churches and charities and schools that you have to do things that violate your religious teaching and your conscience, that's a violation of our first freedom, religious liberty. That's our federal government dictating to us how we practice our religion. We can't afford 4 more years, like the last 4 years, which violates these very important liberties in our life. And if the president is willing to do something like this in a tough election year, imagine what he would be willing to do if he never has to face the voters ever again. You know what? Winston Churchill said it best. The Americans can be counted upon to do the right thing, but only after they have exhausted all the other possibilities. I think we're pretty much there. This election is more than just about jobs. It's more than just about getting manufacturing back on track or better take-home pay. This election is about the meaning of America. It's about the soul of our nation. And this election is that important. We need your help. We need you to help convince people. And together, we can do this. We will not blame other people. We will take responsibility. We won't duck these tough issues. We will get this done. And we will not try to transform America into anything it wasn't meant to be. We won't replace our founding principles. We will reapply our founding principles. We can do this. Let's get this done. Thank you so much for coming out today, Clinton. We appreciate every one of you. Thank you, everybody.